Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're exploring the composition of the boards of major companies and institutions and considering how the proportion of women members might impact financial performance. We'll examine research that suggests companies with more women in key executive roles actually enjoy superior results compared to their less gender-diverse peers. Our panel of experts, analysts and commentators will share their insights, professional and personal, as we attempt to gauge investors' attitudes around this theme. And we'll hear from the front line, from groups and individuals keen to redress historic imbalances in the gender makeup of the boardroom. We start with a little background. Sarah Gordon is the Financial Times business editor. She explains how grave a problem underrepresentation of women has been and continues to be, both here in the UK and overseas.
The countries that do best on women in senior executive positions are, somewhat ironically, China and Eastern Europe, and that's partly because of a historical legacy of women working and, of course, a more egalitarian business environment. In the UK, I mean, the big achievement here was that after the work of the Davis Commission, we got just over 25% of boards being female, which was an enormous improvement from 2010 when the Davis Commission started its work. The senior executive positions, I'm afraid the data is a lot less impressive.
Steve Friedman, based in the UBS CIO in the US and responsible for thematic and sustainable investment strategy, and who co-wrote a recent Gender Diversity Matters research note, On the Road to Parity, gives his take.
The view here, the rationale, is really that as a decision-making body, a board or an executive team, is just likely to be more effective if there is a greater diversity of views, of experience, of skills within the team. If you think, if you do a thought experiment and imagine a board with 8 to 10 people and they're almost all identical, they're almost all carbon copies of one another, then there's going to be very little value coming from the fact that you have several people. They're essentially just going to be confirming their own views. And then you can easily see how a more diverse board is going to be better able to understand some of the complexities of a current environment, and clearly managing or overseeing a company is a complex task. It makes it more likely that they will not be blindsided by particular things.
Aside from offending our collective sense of equality, why is it such a problem that we've had and continue to see these levels of underrepresentation? Tenker Zoltani works on impact investing in the UBS CIO.
I think Paul Polman put it really well this week. What he said is, if you invest in women, you're going to get higher returns. The role of business, in his view, is really to make a positive contribution to society. So if there's a very clear opportunity to offer equal access to women and to men for things like credit or for employment, then why aren't businesses taking the lead in this? So I wouldn't necessarily say it's offensive. I think it's still a low-hanging fruit, even in 2016, which can be accessed and is shown to be financially material.
And what does the data tell us? Well, it's a complex picture whether you look across the UK, Europe or the US, explains Sarah Gordon again.
The latest research suggests that women represent just a sixth of senior executives at the largest listed British companies. So they make up 16% of executive committee members across the FTSE 350. And what, in a sense, is almost more concerning than that very low number is the fact that the positions that they tend to take on boards and in senior executive positions are, in a sense, what could be described as the soft roles. So they don't have the roles where they're in charge of so-called, you know, P&L positions. One's actually responsible for cash flow or managing the finances of a company. And of course, if you're in a senior executive position and you don't have a financial job or a financial background, you're quite unlikely then to get elevated to the board because, of course, you need that experience before you can get there. I mean, the picture is kind of, I mean, it's very similar across Europe. It's actually somewhat worse, surprisingly, in the US. So you've got very low representation of women, both at board level, particularly in the US, and even worse at senior executive level, which of course makes the difficulty of feeding the board more stark.
Now, there's a variety of evidence, some anecdotal, some more scientific, that suggests that companies with more women on the board or in key executive positions enjoy superior financial performance compared to less gender-diverse peers. Brenda Trinoden is global chair of the 30% Club, a group that runs a number of very specific and targeted initiatives that look to broaden the pipeline of women at all levels, from schoolroom to boardroom. Brenda, who also runs the Financial Institutions Group for Europe for ANZ, takes up the story.
There has been a lot of research, but to be very clear, I don't think anybody has proven conclusively the cause and effect that, you know, it's actually if you have more women, you will perform better. But certainly the research has proved strong correlation. The case is either that by doing that, the companies, you know, perform better, or better companies hire more women or attract more women. You know, we're not exactly sure. I mean, we have our theories. But, you know, why does it make good sense? Well, certainly companies that have better balance can be more responsive to the market. You know, women make up over half the population. So the more women you have on your board and in your senior management, the more likely you can respond to your consumers, to the market. Also, you're accessing a much wider talent pool. So if you're only looking at a pale male stale pool, you're really only drawing from a very shallow pool, so always much better to be tapping into the widest possible talent pool.
While there are clearly issues around cause and correlation, there are, in Steve Friedman's view, several important links between diversity and measures of performance.
We've done research that shows that this is not just a theoretical aspect, it's really something that you can show to hold, historically at least, there is a link between greater diversity in the board and financial measures of performance, so accounting measures of performance in particular. And this even extends to, again, at least historically, you can never say this is a guarantee for future returns, but does seem to be also a link with financial market performance, so better returns for shareholders if you're focusing on companies that have this greater element of diversity.
Steve Friedman. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the role of other players in this realm, be they private sector, state actors, or supranational groups, and we'll attempt to gauge the ever-shifting attitude of investors. What of the support or pressure exerted by other players on this stage from those outside the institutions that we've been hearing from and about so far? Beyond private enterprise, are there other NGO or state players, governments or supranational groups who are shaping or attempting to shape the discourse? What are the real drivers of change and who should be leading the way? Tenka Zoltani explains.
Women have sort of been the face of poverty, and if you look at the statistics, 70% of the world's poor are women, so perhaps it became acutely aware from the NGO level and then raised to governments, and then beyond that, financial sector and the private sector certainly took charge, partially through impact investing, but partially through seeing the opportunity and providing women access to capital, but also women-targeted products. So rather than just calling this selling stuff to women, it's how do we actually create or co-conceive products with women that are appropriate, gender appropriate, but also create a huge commercial opportunity. So I think it emerged from bottom up, but now I think it's a very often a blended finance approach involving private and public sectors along with philanthropic capital to address these gaps.
What, if anything, does Steve Friedman consider to be the key driver of change? Where's the most intense pressure coming from?
You have some countries, mainly these are European countries, where there have been some regulations put in place that essentially require a minimum representation of women on the board, and that clearly has been a driver. You have some of the Nordic countries, for instance, where that is the case, but that's not a universal trend, so it certainly helps just cue those numbers upwards in the countries where that is the case, but you do have NGO pressure, so you have some different organizations that have at the very least started by creating transparency, creating rankings. There's one organization called Catalyst that was one of the first to write studies about this link between board diversity and performance, just to name one example. And that does help to create greater awareness. You know, once you have transparency, it becomes a bit more difficult not to do anything. So that has helped, for instance, move a number of companies that are all male-dominated boards to at least have some women, even if they were in a small minority.
We asked Brenda Trinoden, too, to explain who's driving progress forward with the greatest vigor.
We'd like to think that, you know, we've created a lot of noise around this space here in the UK, And now, much more globally, you know, we have a number of international chapters. But when we set up in 2010, just after we set our campaign up, the Davies Commission was established as well by the government with a very similar target. Theirs was 25% by the end of 2015. And now you have the government's Hampton-Alexander Commission, which we're also very closely aligned with. So I think, you know, working together has created a lot more momentum. You have great organizations like Women on Boards, like, you know, Catalyst. We've recently seen the Jane Ann Gaudia report. So our view is to really be an umbrella campaign and to collaborate with all of these groups that are working, you know, towards the same goal.
Now, we've heard a great deal about the many parties seeking to advance the cause, and there seems to be a broad consensus about the need to make further improvements. But one key question remains. Do investors care? Sarah Gordon, again.
Well, I think if we could have really definitive research on the returns to diversity, I think that would help push it up of investors' agendas. The answer is some investors' minds, and you have very powerful and rich investors like Norway's Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is a huge investor in listed companies across Europe and indeed in the UK. And they have, you know, part of their mandate is to consider such issues, but it hasn't tended to be one of the push-button issues for investors. And therefore, at those companies, I mean, there are famous companies like Glencore, which was the last FTSE 100 company to put a woman on its board. This is not, investors are not ringing up Glencore and saying, you must do something about diversity. And that's indeed one of the reasons why it has moved. You know, progress is frankly pretty slow.
The growth of sustainable investing is a compelling narrative, and there are indeed many investors who are clued up and interested in factoring in these considerations to their thinking and to their strategic planning. But at the risk of generalising, do investors as a whole care or care enough about this? Tinker Zoltani again.
I wouldn't say with great conviction that the majority cares. I think when they do see that it's a financially material factor, then they begin to care, or then they see the financial repercussions. We have a growing client base of impact investors, and I think for them, they do ask these questions. They ask, what will this mean for the future? What does it mean for the present? Of course, the financial repercussions, but importantly and increasingly, the social and environmental effects. So I think if you look at some of the studies that have come out, so MSCI, McKinsey, Grant Thornton have all put their names on studies to say that women-led businesses outperform with less volatility and with less scandal, so lower rates of corruption and fraud. So I think it's a sort of a perfect storm of all of these factors coming together, which is raising the awareness, and you're seeing more and more of it in the media, and that's leading to clients or to investors asking these questions.
Time for a final remark from Steve Friedman now on the evidence of links between board diversity and performance.
A lot of the evidence that we found, evidence about the link between board diversity and performance, is really showing that there's a correlation. It's not necessarily showing that there's a causation, right? It's not necessarily the case that adding a woman is necessarily going to cause better performance. And that's because there may be other channels. It might be that, for instance, both greater diversity and better performance are just the results of a common other factor, such as, let's say, a very strong and powerful corporate culture or something like that. So from an academic point of view, you can't really say that there's causation, but for an investor, it doesn't really matter. What this research is saying is that greater diversity may just be a good proxy, allowing you to select better companies. And that's really all that matters if you're an investor, if there's a correlation arising from some other factors, and that this allows you to better choose companies, then it's something that investors ought to incorporate.
So that's what the evidence might suggest. But what about the anecdotal power of specific people within companies, of individual CEOs, for example, to drive real change in attitudes? The FT's Sarah Gordon explains how much power such leaders and occasional provocateurs can wield.
There is also, of course, what's very important is the impetus that individuals give to this, and some of the evidence sort of concludes pretty convincingly that if you have a CEO, if you have a chief executive who minds about this, culture changes, behavior changes, diversity improves. So, I mean, a well-known example in this country is Vittorio Colao at Vodafone, who has been one of these very fervent male champion of diversity and in particular of gender diversity. And I think when the person at the top of your company stands up and makes a statement, a strong statement in support of that, I think that's very effective in changing attitudes and mindsets throughout the organisation.
Interestingly, like Sarah Gordon, Brenda Trenodan focuses in on these exemplars, be they companies or individuals, as the most powerful drivers of change.
The most important thing is seeing some of the exemplars out there in the market. So companies themselves that are taking the lead and that are proudly speaking about what they're doing and what the business impact is. Because the most powerful message is to be able to say, this is good because it's good for business. Not just that it's the right thing to do or that it's something that's imposed upon people. So as an example, we've recently launched a new campaign to focus very much on the pipeline. And our target is to have 30% women on FTSE 100 executive committees by the end of 2020. The CEO of Aviva, Mark Wilson, announced he was the first CEO to sign up to this. He did a great video with us, and he talked all about why this is so good for business and so important for Aviva. So we want to see more of that. We want to see more companies standing out and more female role models.
And that's Brenda Trenodan, bringing us to the end of this 86th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.